It's a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll look at the road ahead for the Heat's final playoff push and preview tonight's game against the Knicks.
And NBA Commissioner Adam Silver sat down with David Locke for a podcast, and he has some thoughts on tanking that we'll share with you later. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for Fansided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me in my writing on Twitter at BRamil13.
There's 11 games left this season for the Heat before the playoffs begin, and Miami is currently in possession of the 7th seed. They're half game up on Milwaukee. They're 2 games back of the Sixers for the 6th spot. So let's look ahead at this final slate of games and try to figure out where the Heat will end up. Let's start with where the Heat stand now, with tiebreakers in the East. Currently, they own the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Bucks. They split the season series against both the Wizards and the Sixers, forcing conference and division tiebreakers if that's necessary. Looking ahead, the Heat have an opportunity to take the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Indiana Pacers this coming Sunday with a win. Though if Indiana keeps playing the way they have been, that won't matter very much, David, at all.
No, it doesn't seem likely that Miami can pull out a win there. As inconsistent as they've been, and while they're still kind of battling through a couple of key injuries to Hassan Whiteside and Dwayne Wade, at least that's the latest updates that we've received, with Indiana playing at such a high level and holding the home court for that particular game on Sunday, I'm not sure Miami, as they're currently playing, can go in there and knock off the Pacers.
And, you know, it would, even if they were to knock off the Pacers, hypothetically, it would help Miami. Obviously, every game matters at this point, but it wouldn't matter in the sense of trying to climb up to where a tiebreaker with Indiana would matter. And, you know, Indiana is probably going to end up with one of the top 4 or 5 seeds. Miami at best would end up with the 6th seed. So they're not even really in the same airspace, so to speak, as the Pacers at this point. Even though they could end up playing in the postseason, a tiebreaker is just not going to matter at that point. But let's look at these next 11 games. Pretty favorable for Miami. 7 of them are going to be at home. So that, you know, that's the positive there. They've got a 4-game homestand from March 27th to April 3rd. That's going to be a key part of this final playoff push. On that homestand, they play the Cleveland Cavaliers, Chicago Bulls, Brooklyn Nets, and Atlanta Hawks. Now, Cleveland obviously is going to be a tough opponent there, but Chicago is actively trying to lose games. Atlanta is actively trying to lose games. Brooklyn, not actively trying to lose games, but are actively losing games. So that might be a situation there. If they can go 3-1 or even a 4-0 against a Ty Lue-less, maybe a little bit directionless Cleveland Cavaliers team, could really bolster their chances to not only maintain their 7th seed where they're at now, because they've you know been sort of slapping away the Milwaukee Bucks over the last couple weeks, but maybe moving up even you know a spot higher to the Sixers in the 6th seed.
That all sounds absolutely possible, and it sounds very nice, but I've lost a little bit of faith there. I know one of the questions that we answered after our last night's recap, you know, that Miami was playing as well as they have all season, and that was a point that you made actually, but I'm still not convinced that this team can hold this consistently. Like, we've seen too many losses throughout the course of the season to bad teams where I don't know that even with this favorable schedule that they'll be able to maximize the opportunity that's being presented to them. Like, I mean, it seems on paper like a very nice stretch for them. You know, 7 home games with that 4-game homestand against bad teams. I don't even think they even have a back-to-back. Or actually, they've got one back-to-back, a home-and-home against Atlanta there. But other than that, it's a pretty favorable schedule, enough time for everybody to kind of get back, get healthy, and everything else like that. But we also have to assume that maybe with the last couple of games of the season that Miami won't be able to climb any further in the standings, and they might have to rest their own players, you know, as these games close out. So I don't know that they're necessarily going to be pushing to go further in the standings either, or go higher in the standings. So I'm just not as sold as you are, I guess, on Miami's ability to make the most of this opportunity.
Well, they did lose that game to the Sacramento Kings, and in that recap, I mentioned how that loss reminded me of those losses down the stretch of last season against the Magic and the Knicks. That really cost Miami a playoff spot there. Look, I think the Sixers are a better team right now as far as trying to catch up to the sixth seed. I still think Miami overall is better than Milwaukee. I just trust them more. I don't know what Milwaukee is on a game-to-game basis. All I know is that Giannis is awesome. That's about it. Chris Middleton's having a good year for them, but that defense is very bad. I look at Philadelphia, though. Ben Simmons is playing really well. Joel Embiid is playing really well. Both of them going into the postseason have been playing well, and they're getting into a rhythm where they can be dangerous in the postseason. For Philadelphia, if Miami wants to catch them, we could look at their schedule coming up too. I mean, they've got in the next five games, Memphis, Orlando, Minnesota, still without Jimmy Butler, Denver, and the Knicks, all very winnable games for Philadelphia. They could, and then after the Knicks, Atlanta, then they play Charlotte. Let's just keep going. Atlanta, Charlotte, Brooklyn, Detroit. That's their next eight or nine games, all of which are very winnable. I mean, it's not out of the question that this team, that the 76ers drop one, maybe two of those games and pull away there and start battling even Washington or Indiana for one of those four or five seeds there. I think Philadelphia is more likely to move up as opposed to fall down to Miami. I think where it's at now with Miami and Milwaukee at 7-8, in some order, will eventually be what it is. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves with those predictions just because I think Miami is securely in the playoffs. The most important thing right now, I think, is holding off Milwaukee for that seventh seed. That seventh spot is really where you want to be. I don't think the Heat would much rather at this point play Boston in the first round than Toronto. Toronto looks just unstoppable in the Eastern Conference. Before we get to that four-game homestand, the next four games are going to be tough for Miami. Three playoff teams over the next four games, including the Thunder, the Pacers, and the Cavaliers. We mentioned that Pacers game before. The Cavaliers game will be at home. Both Oklahoma City and Indiana will be on the road for Miami. Those are going to be tough.
Yeah, I see them going 1-3 over that four-game stretch.
I agree with you.
I don't think they're going to be able to. They've been so bad on the road, with the exception of that Lakers win, having lost nine previous road games before that. I don't think that they can go into Oklahoma City, who's playing a little bit better of late. We're actually able to knock off the Toronto Raptors on the road. So, I mean, they've looked better lately. Indiana, again, with that home court advantage, and even Cleveland there. While Miami will be hosting the Cavaliers, I still see the Cavaliers being able to trump whatever Miami can bring at that point in time. So 1-3 seems pretty realistic and a little bleak, to be honest with you.
Three playoff teams. I think that they can win against Indiana. I still just don't know what makes the Pacers good.
We're going to find out on Sunday.
Unfortunately, I suppose. Cleveland, who knows? I think they can go 2-2, but I'm with you. I tend to think 1-3 is probably more accurate. But let's predict the rest of these 11 games. Yeah. Where do you see Miami finishing at the end of the regular season?
I've got over the next 11 games that they'll be going 6-5 with a final record of 44-38. I actually have them dropping the second game at Atlanta on that back-to-back, even though the Hawks aren't particularly good. I think they're going to be playing for something. I think those players there, again, has been stated many times in many different ways, organizations tank, players don't, and I think they're going to lose badly in Miami facing the Heat, and then when the Heat travel to Atlanta, they'll lose, I think, to the Hawks. So that's how I see that playing out. I think that's the difference between you and I as far as our predictions.
Yeah, I've got them at one more game over you. I've got them at 7-4, finishing the season with 45 wins. So we're right around the same area. So I was 7-4, you're 6-5. Overall positive.
Yeah.
That's above 500 over the next 11 games, and that should get them in. And considering how Milwaukee's been playing, I'm really eyeing that seventh seed, as you could tell. And 7-4, even 6-5. Should be good enough, I think, to maintain that seventh seed as long as the Bucks don't completely figure out their defense on the fly, which I don't see happening. But it's all going to start with the Knicks tonight, and the Heat can't afford to drop these winnable games. We'll preview the matchup next, but first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long and delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break.
And make sure to listen on Tuesday specifically, when Wes and I will be hosting these for the rest of the season. Make sure you get the latest episode every day by subscribing on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
As of us recording this Tuesday night, no update on Dwayne Wade or Hassan Whiteside. As far as we know, they are still out. For the Knicks, Lance Thomas is day-to-day. He could play. Maybe he won't play. I'm not sure Lance Thomas makes that much of a difference. in the game overall. He's not fine. So he is a player for the New York Knicks. And between the Knicks and the Heat, the season series is split at 1-1. It's a three-game series this season, so this will be the last time these two teams play. I think that if you look at the difference between when Miami lost to New York and when Miami beat New York, the difference was the fact, I think, at least, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, but Hassan Whiteside played in Miami's win, and he did not play in when the Heat lost. In the game where he didn't play, Enes Kanter went off, and in the game where he did play, Enes Kanter was contained. So the difference in these Heat-Knicks matchups this season has basically come down to Hassan Whiteside and Enes Kanter, which is not my favorite way of brand of basketball, but them's is the facts, David.
It I think it requires a little more context than that. I think that first loss was also, I looked it up and it was, I had forgotten this, but it was the second night of a back-to-back where they had just gone, they got slapped by Cleveland the night before, and then they go and face the Knicks, and again, without Whiteside, and that's when Kanter absolutely destroyed them. It was a really bad back-to-back set for Miami there. Deion Waiters was still in the lineup and he had a rough game. Goran Dragic really struggled that night too, only single digits in points. So that was unfortunate. And you know, I was thinking of this matchup being the key one for Miami, obviously without Kristaps Porzingis there, we don't have to worry about KP going off there. But Kanter has had some pretty solid games, even when he was in the Thunder against Miami. His low post dominance, his offensive rebounding, the fact that he gets his position as well as he does in the low post and is able to get off a number of shots. So he's got a really smooth back-to-basket game. And I thought, you know, at first I was thinking to myself, is Bam Adebayo better equipped for this? But the more I thought about Kander's style of play, he really is a lot more physical than he gets credit for. I think he's a lot like Greg Monroe, maybe even a little bit more physical than Greg Monroe, in that he throws his elbows and hooks a defender there. So Adebayo, as strong as he is, just doesn't have the bulk to really limit Kanter. Kanter is a big guy. He's a legit 6'11 and a good 270, I think. So I think it needs somebody a lot more like Whiteside. So you might absolutely be right. He might be the key, you know, even though he's not necessarily known for his physical style of play, I think he's just big enough and just strong enough to make things difficult for Kanter, and that seems to be the key.
Yeah, Adebayo definitely struggled. And look, I don't. It doesn't look like for now that Whiteside will be back. You never know. Maybe the Heat rush him back for this game. But when you're looking at these keys to win, the number one thing is don't let Enes Kanter kick your butt. He scored only 15 points when New York won, or when the Heat won. Sorry, and he scored 22 points in the time the Knicks won the game. So, look, if they're not going to have Whiteside, they've got to figure out something else. You know, probably the best strategy, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but Enes Kanter gets the ball in the low block, throw the double at him immediately, get the ball out of his hands, because I'm just not scared of any of the other Knicks players. Kristaps Porzingis does not play for the Knicks right now this season, dealing with his injury. So Enes Kanter is really, I think they're only, him and Tim Hardaway Jr. are like the only offensive threats.
Are we ignoring the greatness of Michael Beasley?
Oh, I didn't mean to. Is that going to come back to haunt me just like Wilson Chandler did? Damn it.
Yeah. Is Beasley done too, Wes? I can't believe you're going this far. And look, we're overlooking Courtney Lee, Trey Burke, and Emmanuel Mudiay, who they acquired from the Denver Nuggets. Come on. I mean, that's a deep team there. They're just not, they're not exactly gelling at this point of season, but they've got promise. By the way, that's completely sarcasm. I don't know if anybody actually noticed that on our, as far as our listeners.
My second key to victory here is the Knicks don't shoot or make a lot of threes. They're the bottom five in the league in both of those categories. Don't let them start now.
Beasley.
This is the game that Michael Beasley just wins the game for New York. It gets his revenge on Miami.
He's still angry at Miami and Eric Spoelstra. Who knew that during his tenure here, he never felt like he was getting
a fair shake? He came off those comments a little bit, but it's hard to know exactly what Michael Beasley's thinking. I don't think Michael Beasley knows what Michael Beasley's thinking. My third key here.
And with D. Wade here? And what about with D. Wade there? You think he's going to get motivated to show up, D. Wade? Like, kind of, why didn't you mentor me more during those 2 years we had together?
Oh, my God.
No, I don't think so either. I can't believe we're going in this deep a dive on these narratives.
I don't know what else. It's not fun anymore.
It hasn't been fun in a while.
It's kind of like it's forced narratives. I know that you're being sarcastic and you're joking around right now, but it's genuinely stressing me out. I can't do it. Just these forced narratives.
Yeah.
My third key, and they're all kind of related here, defense. You look at these winnable games that Miami's dropped lately. You're looking at, you know, they gave up 131 points to the Lakers. The Kings shot 51% from the field. It's been the defense, surprisingly enough, that's been the problem these last few games that Miami's dropped that they probably should have won. So just don't let that happen.
Even their defense wasn't particularly good against the Nuggets either. So that's a concern. I don't think they necessarily fixed anything. Just because they were able to pull out a victory over Denver doesn't necessarily indicate that they're playing at a higher level defensively anyway. So I'm concerned about the random scrub Heat killer that I don't know who it could be on this team full of such luminaries as Trey Burke and Courtney Lee, you know, both of whom are fine players in their own regard. I don't know which one of them is more likely to burn Miami. It could be Doug McDermott. If he could have like a really big game, you never know with a guy like his, with him, like him, who has that kind of shooting ability from the perimeter, you could get a big game from Moutier, maybe Jared Jack.
Oh, my God. If it's Jared Jack, I will throw my television out the window. He is my least favorite player to watch in the league. I cannot.
Man, you have that strong opinion on Jared Jack.
I will go to my grave on, I wish Jared Jack would stop playing basketball. Not anything personal against him. Let him make his money, make a living, whatever, blah, blah, blah. He is so agitating to watch because he thinks, he really does think he's like peak Stephon Marbury, and it's annoying because he's never even been near that. And
I got to point out though, he did not play the most recent Knicks victory over the Chicago Bulls, who are actively tanking. DNP coach's decision, so okay. Jack might be out of the rotation there because he's too good. He's too good, and he improves their chances of winning. So.
And
they want to see what they've got in Moutier. I think that's true.
That might be more about what it is, and their other guy, Frank Ntilikina. So,
yeah, he's coming off the bench. Yeah, 24 minutes off the bench against the Bulls. So
that'll be fun. But you're right. I think McDermott is the prototype random scrub Heat killer. So look forward to that.
Yay.
Coming up next, we'll give you a sneak peek into David Locke's conversation with Adam Silver that will air on Locked On NBA this Thursday. But first, did you know that you can listen to Locked On Heat on your home assistant like Amazon Echo or Google Home? It's a hands-free way to listen to the latest episodes of Locked On Heat or any of the other Locked On Podcast Network shows. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. The boss man, David Locke, had an opportunity to sit down with Adam Silver at the Sloan Analytics Conference for a conversation about a variety of NBA issues, including tanking, gambling, players speaking out on social issues, and possible league expansion. We urge you to check out the full conversation by subscribing to Locked On NBA, where David and I also host on Tuesdays, by the way. But here's a peek at their conversation about tanking and its impact on the draft and sports gambling.
You've been forward-thinking in regards to gambling. If you do get involved with gambling the way it's been talked about, do you have to eliminate anything that incentivizes losing?
That's a great question. I mean, the problem is, if you put it that starkly, that anytime you have a draft that rewards a team for poor performance, and reward by meaning very purpose of the draft as we have it is to help the poorest performing teams restock with the best incoming players. I guess I can't answer that question affirmatively that we can eliminate anything. I think, though, that to the extent sports betting becomes legal, widespread in the United States, not just in Nevada, that we're going to have to especially focus on a lot of these integrity issues, and that, you know, it doesn't just go to those people who be betting on the games, legally betting on the games, but it's something that goes to the heart of what a sports league is about, and that's competition. Now, my hesitation a little bit too is, you know, putting aside tanking, I'll say the word, which to me suggests players or coaches are intentionally losing games, and I think if I, as the commissioner, ever thought that was what was actually happening on the floor, of course we'd step in. But then there is a legitimate rebuilding. You see it in lots of businesses where an organization says we need to bring in new talent. It's going to take time to develop and train them, or we have some existing talent, and as you see sometimes in the league with young players that aren't getting a lot of minutes. So I'm not about to penalize a team for trading away a veteran to get draft picks, because that's how the league works. So finding and calibrating this is not an exact science, but we'll even have to spend that much more time focused on it if sports betting becomes legal.
David, what stuck out to me there about Adam Silver's comments was the fact that he brings up competitive balance and the NBA draft there. Look, we tend to look at the NBA draft as a system that rewards the worst teams with the best picks, but and that kind of get, you know, that's sort of the point there, that people call up to basically reform tanking, you know, or basically saying, well, how could you blame teams for tanking if you're rewarding the worst teams with the best players in the draft? But it's a system that works in every other league, and it just tends to get it tends to just draw more quote unquote tanking teams in the NBA. But Adam Silver's point, he also mentions like, look, this is a way to increase competitive balance in the league. If you want the worst teams to get better, you got to sort of give them the best players. And if parity is going to be important to the league, then it's something that they need to think about. So it's going to be hard to eliminate tanking while also maintaining competitive balance. Look, I don't envy Adam Silver's position here. This is clearly an issue that I suppose needs to be addressed, even though we can argue the merits of even that in general. I don't think that tanking is that much of an issue compared to some other issues facing the sport. And I just think it's a little overblown. And I think it's very much a straw man argument at the end of the day. I could be wrong, but either way, I don't envy Silver's position here, because it looks like some changes are at least going to be made at some point. We've already had changes with the lottery odds that will be taking place next draft. So what do you do at this point? It doesn't seem like Silver has an answer. I don't know if you have any ideas.
I don't think there is one. I mean, I think that the argument against or for tanking or whatever it is, like for me, I can only speak on my own personal opinion. One that's changed and evolved over the years as I've covered the league and followed these players and talked to a lot of them and see the process kind of shape up, no pun intended there. But, you know, it's just, you know, I think we're mostly hardwired to believe that teams have to win at all costs. But there is an overarching, I think, idea or strategy that could be implemented, and that's something that Sam Hinkie did to great success in Philadelphia, recognizing that the Heat were as strong as they were and weren't likely to abdicate their Eastern Conference throne. They were going to be stuck in this, perpetual cycle of mediocrity, and decided to do something different about it. They traded away their players. They created what they know now, and they branded as the process, and it's worked out for them because of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and others. So I think that's the problem then with this whole quote unquote tanking strategy, is that you could have these other themes and ideas and strategies defining whether or not a team gives their maximum effort. And I think your common fan still wants to see a team struggle and give their maximum effort. And that's not to say that those Philadelphia teams weren't giving maximum effort. You had guys like TJ McConnell struggling just for playing time, and he's become a fan favorite. Right. You know, he's from the area. He's worked hard and improved his game. He is a serviceable NBA
Robert Covington
player.
Only had the opportunity because they were fielding basically a D-League team, and he developed into a really nice player for them that was in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation last season. I mean,
right. So I think both you and I are in that same feeling that tanking isn't as bad a problem as a lot of people make it.
And I also, you know, yes, you have that Philadelphia 76ers process that brought tanking sort of to the forefront as a conversation. But you look at the people, teams tanking like the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings and the Orlando Magic. Look, the Suns are tanking recently, but basically they hadn't been always tanking since they've been bad. That's a team that tried to win and made some very bad personnel decisions and just turned out to be bad. The Orlando Magic and the Sacramento Kings have been trying to win badly for years, and they're just bad at winning. They're not actively tanking as much as some people want to believe that they are. Look, Dwight Howard forced his way out of the Orlando Magic, shot their entire plan to hell, and they've been reeling ever since. They've missed on draft picks. They haven't developed players well enough. They hired some bad coaches. But they've been actively trying to win. You look at what Sacramento's done. They bring in George Hill. They bring in Vince Carter. They bring in Zach Randolph. They've been trying. They surrounded DeMarcus Cousins with Rajon Rondo for some reason, but they genuinely thought that that was a good idea. The problem isn't the teams that actively tank with a plan, such as the Sixers, are actually, I would argue, good for the league, because they're able to tank the right way, if we're going to say, you know, if there is such a way, tank the right way and get two really fun, good players like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, put them together, and now you have one more team that you want to watch on League Pass every night. Before, nobody wanted to watch the Sixers. Now you do. The problem isn't the teams with good plans that execute those good plans. The problem are the bad teams who are trying to win but are so bad at running teams that they probably shouldn't have jobs in the first place, i.e. Sacramento, Orlando, Phoenix, and the like of them.
Yeah, that's fair. I think you also have to consider the fact that just there are just some players that don't ever take that leap and won't become anything more than role players. For every Embiid and Simmons, you get a Jahlil Okafor or Nerlens Noel. I mean, that's the reality. Even Philadelphia's plan, as successful as it seems like it might be, was flawed. I mean, Nerlens Noel became expendable because Robert Covington started playing as well as he did, because they acquired Dario Saric, who wasn't even part of the plan necessarily. So, I think it's a crapshoot. You look at Orlando's situation, they've had a number of players in and out of that system. You know, guys like Victor Oladipo, even Aaron Gordon now, who enters restricted free agency. I don't even know that he's the kind of player you can build around. I wrote about this recently. You know, he's going to get paid a lot of money because that's what the market seems to dictate. But is he really the kind of guy that you can invest in, that, 4 or 5 years at $20 million per? I think you're going to have to, because you don't let him go the way you let Oladipo go, the way you let Tobias Harris go. I mean, they traded away Elfrid Payton, who they also drafted in the lottery. I mean, there's only so much you can do. Players don't necessarily always take the leap. They've gone through a number of different coaches. That might be the more important thing to focus on, is the fact that Brett Brown has been there through the really bad times. He's there now reaping the rewards. Whereas
that is an understated point when we talk about the Sixers in the process, is that they hired the right coach. Brett Brown has been a good coach for them, and that hasn't necessarily been the case in other places. When it comes down to it, you're right. The draft is pretty much a crapshoot. You've got some prospects that look better than others sometimes, and you have every once in a while you have a Tim Duncan can't miss kind of guy, but. I don't know how changing the draft, to kind of go back to the original point presented by David Locke and talked about by Adam Silver there, I don't know how much you could change the draft and still help teams like Sacramento and Orlando not be such bad organizations. Just sometimes teams suck. Sometimes you have a Cleveland Browns of your league. No matter what you do to help them, they're still just going to suck and screw things up. And that's just unfortunately the case. That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat, and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.